I am speaking with Arne Tanimoto, viola da gambist, and he will be coming with Parker Ramsey and playing the music of Bach and Moret, a program titled In the Court of the King, presented by Chatham Baroque and Renaissance Baroque. Good afternoon, Arne. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So there has been a second concert added on the 5th of April at our Teutonia Männerchor, and the original concert is scheduled for Saturday, April 6th at Hicks Memorial Chapel at the Pittsburgh Theological Seminary. And you're going to be doing music of the 17th and 18th century of Europe, showing the world in which the viol virtuoso and composer Marin Marais lived, and his influence on the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. You are a gold medalist and the first ever American laureate of the International Bach Abel competition of 2018, and you play the viola da gamba and also the Baroque cello, and I think they even created a major for you at the Juilliard School, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, well, they didn't create the major specifically for me. I just happened to be
the first
person mm-hmm. at the Juilliard School to major in the viola da gamba.
I see. And it's a very interesting instrument. So what drew you to the viola da gamba?
Yeah, great question. It's certainly unique. I was an aspiring cellist back in the day, aspiring modern cellist, I should say, and I did a bachelor's and master's in modern cello performance. And at both of those schools, at Oberlin Conservatory and the Eastman School of Music, there were really great early music departments and people teaching both the Baroque cello and the viola da gamba. And I guess I was just in the right place at the right time, and I had the right teachers who introduced me to the instrument and all the wonderful repertoire. And, you know, over the course of those 6 years, I fell in love with the viola da gamba.
There is a picture of you on your website and also the Chatham Baroque website where you're holding an instrument, and it has an amazing piece of sculpture at the tip of the instrument. Now, is that a Baroque cello?
That is a viola da gamba.
It is a viola da gamba. It, because I've seen the faces before and the sculpted pieces before, but I just wanted to make sure. It is a beautiful instrument. Where did that come from?
Oh, thank you. That was an instrument that I commissioned from a Dutch builder quite some years ago. And it's, in terms of the model, it's a replica of a 17th century German instrument. There was a very famous builder in Hamburg in the 17th century. His name was Joachim Tilke. In this day and age, a lot of gamba players consider him to be the Stradivarius of gamba builders. And this particular model actually belongs to my former teacher, Katharina Mainz, in mm-hmm. Oberlin. And I always thought the instrument was just aesthetically really beautiful in the way that it was decorated and the way that it was built with this alternating strips of wood, and I wanted to have a copy of that, and so I commissioned it from this builder, Hesina Liedmeier, in Holland.
Mm-hmm. How long would it take to build an instrument like that?
Oh, I think that depends on the builder. Some luthiers are quite fast. Maybe it'll take them a matter of 3 or 4 months to build an instrument. Some takes, you know, close to half a year or more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just so delicate looking and beautiful. And I know, I believe one of the things about the viola da gamba is, do you use the gut strings?
We do use gut strings. We bow on a combination of plain gut strings, which are made from beef or lamb intestines. They're twisted and dried together. I know it sounds kind of gross. and then as well as gut strings that are wound or overspun mm-hmm. with metal like copper or silver.
Oh, wow. Oh, beautiful. So tell us a little bit about the music that you and Parker will be playing on the concert.
Yes, so we'll be playing a combination of music from France and Germany throughout the 17th and 18th centuries. The viola da gamba, of course, had its heyday in the 17th century through the early part of the 18th century. It sort of died out, unfortunately, towards the end of the 18th century, but a lot of its great solo repertoire was written in places like France, for example, by Marin Marais. And this program sort of showcases the sort of golden age of solo music for the viola da gamba. Like I said, Marais was at the court of Louis XIV. He was a pupil of Jean-Baptiste de Lisle as well as Saint-Colomb, who's being featured on the program. He published 5 volumes of pièces de viol, pieces for viol,
wow.
And they totaled to something like 600 plus pieces for either solo viola da gamba or 2 or even 3 gambas, and he's easily the most prolific composer for the instrument, and it's just exquisite, and he clearly had an influence all across Europe, not just in France, and some of his music actually made its way to the Bach family. There's a manuscript source that has copies of his some of his operas that he wrote, that Bach may have known. So there's sort of an interesting thread that we have between Marais.
I'm fascinated by that, but I'm also curious as to why the viola da gamba seemed to disappear. Was it its size or the sound, because the sound is so luscious and velvety. So I'm curious if you have an idea.
It's a very special sound. It's a very, very different from that of the cello. It's very, yes, it's very transparent, light, and very resonant. The gambas typically have 6 or sometimes even 7 strings. They're fretted, so most of the stopped notes with the open string being stopped against the hard fret, have a very resonant sound, almost like that of an open string. So why did it disappear? A number of reasons. Firstly, it's not a particularly loud instrument. And historically speaking, as you go further into the 18th century, concerts went from small chambers to larger concert halls. And the gamba could just not compete with instruments like the cello and the violin. And so that's one reason. Another reason is sort of more socioeconomic, which is that in that the gamba had this close association with the aristocracy. And you were noting that instrument that I had, which is a copy of this fancy German instrument by Joachim Tilke. They tend to be very ornate because it was often aristocrats who bought these instruments and played them. And, well, we know what happened in places like France towards the end of the 18th century. It was not considered good politic to be associated with the nobility.
Right, right, absolutely. You and Parker have been together for how long now with these concerts that you have been performing?
I think we started, Parker and I first met probably back in 2015, 2016, but we didn't really start performing together as a duo until I think it was 2018-19 when I moved back to the States.
Where were you in France working there? Or
I was studying abroad. I took a year off from freelancing on a grant to study in Basel, Switzerland at the Scuola Cantore Basiliensis.
You came back here, and the two of you decided, well, let's do something, because it also is an unusual combination of instruments with harp and harpsichord, and you with the viola da gamba and baroque cello. Just because we don't see the harp that much we see it in baroque music, but to focus on it in a program is, I think, a little bit unusual.
It is unusual. Unfortunately, it's unusual. The harp is, even in this day and age with the early music revival, in places, especially in the States, it tends to be a very obscure instrument. Not many people have access to them or want to take the time to learn how to play them. So it is a very unique combination that you don't see often. And It wasn't necessarily because of that. It's just because Parker and I are just closely aligned in terms of our musical and artistic values, and we're also really good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, oh, it's an odd combination. We're definitely an odd couple in that sense, but there are lots of possibilities. And even though there's, and I'm sure Parker's going to talk about this in his portion of the interview,
right.
There's not a whole lot of music that was written for the harp, but we know that they were definitely around. And so, you know, a lot of this mentality we have when performing early music is about being able to adapt to whatever the situation is. So if you're faced with a situation where you don't necessarily have a harpsichord or a lute to accompany a viola da gamba, you can use another instrument like the harp, because
mm-hmm.
We're very flexible back then.
Yeah, I find that Baroque music is extremely flexible. I think when you get into the classical period, it's like, no, we're tired of everybody not paying attention to the notes that are on the page. So we're going to make you all settle down a bit. And because the music can be played by many different instruments. And when you hear a concert of Baroque music, I think it's always exciting because things can happen right there in the performance that have never happened before.
Exactly. When you have the art of basso continuo, anything can happen. Someone like Parker, who's an incredible continuist on both the harp and harpsichord, he's constantly improvising harmony over the bass lines when we're playing together. And yeah, it means that there are all kinds of things that could happen in a performance or in a rehearsal or with other combinations of continuo instruments.
Are there any particular pieces that you really enjoy playing that you'll be sharing with us on the upcoming concert?
Oh, they're all some of my favorites. Oh, I meant to mention one more thing about the flexibility in Baroque music, if
sure.
you don't mind.
No.
Speaking about being adaptable, the Bach sonata that we're performing on the program actually exists in two forms. The one that we're playing is for obbligato harpsichord and viola da gamba, but it also exists as a trio sonata for two flutes in basso continuo. So that just goes
wow.
to show how flexible things were, not just for the performers, but the composers themselves would sort of repurpose their own music for other instruments.
Oh, absolutely. That is amazing. So then you have the music that you'll be playing and, you know, just tell our audience maybe some things to listen for in some of these pieces that you'll be playing.
Obviously, the program is split in half, with the first half being French music with the harp and the second half being German music with the harpsichord. There's definitely a huge timbral difference between the two.
Right.
And also stylistically, I'm playing this French music from the 17th century. It tended to be much more, I suppose you could say, idiomatic, and more lute and guitar-like. There would be lots of double stops in chords that you hear in the music of Saint-Colombe and Marais, whereas in the second half, it's much more sparse. The Bach sonata, I'm pretty much just playing a single line, sort of in duo with, as a duet, with the harpsichord's right hand. And so it's very different writing for the instrument. It's much more contrapuntal in that sense. And obviously the differences between the two instruments that Parker's playing is it's going to be a completely different sound, much softer and sweeter on the first half than the second half of the harpsichord.
Right. The harpsichord brings a very interesting sound to everything. But I am fascinated by the fact that you will be playing and accompanied by Parker when he's playing the harp. And I'm really looking forward to some of that music because it's just, a combination that you don't hear that much.
Yes, it's a very special sound. And the music itself it can verge on being very esoteric compared to something like Bach, which, you know, it's a classic. Everyone knows and loves the French suites and,
right,
and
right.
The sonatas for viola da gamba and harpsichord and so on.
Mm-hmm. So you have your instruments that are larger than life and challenging, I'm sure, to move around. And I will be speaking with Parker, but I assume that Parker's bringing both a harp and a harpsichord?
He's just bringing his harp. I believe the Chatham Baroque is going to be providing us with the harpsichord. That would be a lot for us to schlep from New York.
It would.
Luckily, we don't have to.
Thank heavens. Arnie, you're teaching. You're on the faculty at Princeton University, and you also maintain a private studio. You also are teaching at the Mountainside Baroque Summer Academy. Is that down in Columbia, Maryland?
It's in Cumberland, Maryland,
which is
way out west on the border with West Virginia.
Okay. And that is a summer program type thing?
Yes. It's a week-long summer camp for young kids. It's probably one of the only ones that I know of, at least in the States, that's early music-oriented. Students can learn a little bit about Baroque violin, recorder, Baroque cello, viola da gamba, harpsichord, and it's geared for kids who are just middle and high schoolers. Most of the workshops that we have in the United States tend to be geared towards adult amateurs.
Oh.
So this is a really special thing that we've been doing down in Cumberland.
I see. That sounds amazing. And then the two of you as an ensemble, you and Parker, I believe you are called a Golden Wire. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So where does the name come from? How did that morph into you two?
Parker will be able to speak better about that for me. It's sort of taken from Milton's Paradise Lost. Yeah, Parker is the true intellectual mastermind behind these kinds of things.
Excellent.
I distinctly remember with the two of us having a conversation about coming up with a name and thinking, we need to avoid certain kinds of names, and it would be great if there's some sort of reference to English music or something about England, because we're both Anglophiles when it comes to 17th century music as well as French music.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
He was able to find this really great quote from Paradise Lost.
Oh, excellent. Well, I will ask Parker that question when I speak with him. There is a great picture of the two of you at the Golden Wire website where you're sort of sitting on, it almost looks like maybe possibly garage dumpsters in the middle of New York City.
Yes, but where did we do that? We had a photo session somewhere downtown.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's somewhere near the World Trade Center.
Right.
Near
well,
one of the piers.
It's a great shot. And we really look forward here in Pittsburgh to your concerts, now two concerts, Friday, April 5th at 7:30, and that's going to be at the Teutonian Männerchor, and then Saturday, April 6th at 7:30. And the music from the courts of 17th and 18th century Europe, showing the world in which viol virtuoso and composer Marin Marais lived, and his influence on the music of Johann Sebastian Bach. You can always get your tickets by going to chathambaroque.org. We are so looking forward to you and Parker performing for us and, you know, sharing this beautiful, beautiful music of the 17th and 18th century. Arnie, thank you so much for taking a little bit of time to speak with me today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.